Today on Wings, women who escaped from Kuwait.
Kuwait is not a place to be, please. Nobody should go to Kuwait. Girls are dying.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
It's a common story. Women from poorer countries think of going abroad for better wages. Someone offers them a good position, and they go. But conditions are not as promised. The work is worse. The pay is worse. Food and sleep may be withheld. There are sexual demands, and they can't leave. Today on Wings, you hear women from Cameroon explaining how they were taken in and how they got out of Kuwait. Patience Wingo reports.
Karine is one of the many young Cameroonian girls who, out of the frustration of not picking a well-paid job, fell in the hands of a wrong recruiter's network who claimed they could connect her to an employer resident in Kuwait.
It all started here in Cameroon when I saw it on the TV. They said that there is job opportunity in Kuwait for house helps. And they said that it's also for nursing and for those that want to work at the airport. So I was very happy. I told my family about that. We're very happy. We know that by me going out there, we give a brighter future in my family. Now people tell me here in Cameroon, when I go there, I work from 1 to 6 months and they'll give me 125,000. After 6 months, they'll be giving me 250,000 francs. I told them that, okay.
250,000 Cameroon francs is about 425 US dollars.
Some people told me that the country is not good. I said that I'll go and see it for myself. Before leaving, I asked them, is the job difficult? They said, no, that will do everything in the machine. I said, okay, are they going to seize our passport? They said, no, that they are not going to seize our passport. I said, okay, I'm asking all this because I want to be sure. I don't want to go in that country. I'm stranded and they use me for prostitution. I said, okay, it's good that you've told me like that. I'm going. I gave them 150,000 francs.
Karine confesses that at the beginning, she was excited to travel to Kuwait once her documents were processed and handed to her. But the excitement dwindled immediately. She arrived Kuwait and met her employer.
When we arrived Kuwait, the people asked me, where is my passport? I gave them my passport. About 46 of us from here sat down there. They were taking our fingerprints so that we cannot run away from that country. So when we left from there, they gave the passport to our agent. And the agent said that we should go in the car, that we should enter the car. They were pushing us. That enter the car, that's how we started crying. We are free. When we left from there, we went to the office. They kept us so many girls. We had so many for sale. That same night, before giving us to the people, they forced us to sign a contract. We said that we need to read the contract before they sign. They said we must sign it before we read it. We signed it. I signed the contract. Here in Cameroon, they said that we need to work for 1 year. But on that form, they said that 2 years, and they'll be paying us 240,000. And it was written there that it was jobs for animals, which means jobs for slaves.
You're listening to Karine, who traveled from Cameroon to Kuwait looking for a good job.
So they took me to the house. Just after I started working, I worked from 9 p.m. to 4 a.m. in the morning. I even pleaded that, Mama, please, I'm tired. Let me rest. She said that she paid more money. Me, pay more money. You, my slave, you work. That's how I was just walking. They left me. I rest about 1 hour. They came. They knocked the door. They said, Karine, you come out fast. I said, Mama, I've not rest well. They said, work, me pay. Me pay you, my slave, work. That's how I was walking in the house. When it was 12 o'clock, I was happy. I said, hey, I'll rest. They said, no work. I work from 7 a.m. to 4 a.m. every day. One guy in that house wanted to rape me. He used a knife. This is my hand here. He pierced me with that knife that if I don't give him what he wants, he will not allow me. When I explained it to the family, they told me that I'm stinking.
Karine explains how the family she had to work for treated her as stinking. They made her share her toilet with cats.
When I was walking, I was sharing my toilet with 4 cats. I was calling them my brothers and sisters because those were the only people that I could play with. I don't have any friends. They don't want to see me yet. I walk every day. I started feeling sharp pains in my stomach, affect my heart. I don't know if that is the physics of the cat or whatsoever. I stayed for 3 days without eating. I told my mama, I said, Mama, please, can I cook my Cameroon food? They said that if you have tried. They went and removed one pot from the dustbin they gave me. I washed the pot I wanted to cook. They used the house spray. They sprayed inside that. They don't like it. It stinks. So I stayed like that without eating. They said, me just keep cleaning. You need to work for me. You are my slave. I said, I will just take what you people have given me.
Karine thinks there may have been a surveillance camera that revealed how much she was crying. The family reported her to the agency.
When I'm crying, it's like there was camera in the house that they were seeing me. I don't know. So those people called the agency and said that I'm crying to go back to Cameroon because they beat us every day.
Reporter Patience Wingo talked with 2 other young women who made the trip from Cameroon to Kuwait.
Susan and Cynthia are other victims of the recruiter's network who went to Kuwait on the promise of 2-year contracts purportedly with decent pay packages. They say little did they know that what actually awaited them was hunger, rape, loneliness, and hard labor.
You can work for 18 good hours standing, only rest, only for a few hours. You start the house chores from ironing, cooking, everything, washing, everything. But whenever I worked, the woman was not pleased. I don't know whether she thought I was coming to take her husband. So I was taken to the office where our different sponsors came and took us. I went, another woman took me and treated me badly. I walked and walked and even asked her to have shower. She refused and said that the shower was bad when the shower was really okay. Then from there, they took me back to the office. Another power came and took me when I saw that this power was really a responsible man. But to my surprise, as I got to the father's house, the father was alone in the house. And then the father wanted me to have sex with him, which I refused. And then he gave me some sexy dresses to put on. And I refused to put it on. At times he would slap me.
I'm a girl who traveled from Cameroon to Kuwait. I was deceived here in Cameroon by an agent. And this agent took 1.5 million francs CFA from me and deceived me. I was going to work in a company in Kuwait. He told me my flight was to be at 12. When I arrived at the airport, I tried calling him. He said he was coming. So when I stayed at the airport, he came very late. When they have checked people and people were in the plane, this man came in and hurriedly forced me to go and check my document and get into the plane. When I finished checking, I wanted to meet him to ask 1 or 2 questions how I'm going to travel. He disappeared. I tried calling him. He didn't pick his call. When I got into the plane, I said, let me flip through my document there. I saw a contract showing that I was going to Kuwait to work as a housemaid. And my signature was forged and signed on that contract. I didn't sign the contract. The agent here in Cameroon forged my signature and signed on that contract. So arriving in Kuwait, where the police were checking our documents, my passport was taken and handed over to somebody. I don't know the person. The person came to the airport, picked me up. At the airport, went to a house. It was just a small room. I was kept there. So many of us, so many girls, were kept in that small room to sleep on the floor. They were giving us little food. So I slept for some few minutes. The man came, said I should follow him. He took me to a certain house. So in that house, they told me these people were good. But when that agent left, the story was different. This woman took my luggages, kept in her room, everything, gave me just a uniform to put on, and a little bottle of Vaseline to use as my body cream for all of that 2 years. She went inside and showed me a small room, ironing room. It's just like a corridor. That was where I slept on the floor near the kitchen. And that was where we did the ironing. I did the cleaning. I did the cooking. Some days, no food. Took care of 6 children in that house. So at times, this woman, when I'm done with work in her own house, she'll take me to her mother's house to continue working. I wake up at 5 a.m. I go to bed at 1 a.m. in the morning. At times, no food.
Susan and Cynthia did not have it easy freeing themselves from the grip of their employers in Kuwait, where they said A law had just been enacted at the time at the National Assembly to give protection on paper to domestic workers.
There was no means to communicate the office because when you reach there, they don't even give you phones. Even you cannot buy a SIM card because you're not having the nationality of Kuwait.
Cynthia says she pretended she had a cold to avoid the men who wanted her to wear sexy dresses. This got her taken back to the main office and accused of having a fake medical exam.
When I arrived there, I already did my medicals, but I was pretending that I was having cold as that father was saying that I should have sex with him, I should wear those sexy dresses. I refused. So they took me, they came and told me that I have a failed medical, so I have to go back to my country. They took every money I had, they tore my bag from that office, they tore my bag and removed money that I had in my bag, the one I learned from Cameroon with those that night, and my bags were at the office. They took me that I was going, so I pleaded with that father that I cannot go, my certificate, everything are inside my bag, I cannot go and allow my bag there. So I will call my brother to pay the penalty. So I called my brother, he sent the money to pay the penalty, and then I took the bag. At the airport, I was taken again by immigration police. They locked me in a small room the whole night, and then they took me at about 5 o'clock in the morning to where they went and kept us. In that place, there were many girls there suffering some for months. The type of food they even eat, they rice every day, with some funny types of food. They took us from there. After that, they took us to another center where we passed through police making fingerprints. Then they took us to another center where from there we were then sent back to our countries, empty-handed.
Susan.
I told them I don't want to work again. They should send me back to my country. This woman said, I've come to work, I must work. I went down on my knees, nobody to talk to. I was being locked up in the house. I couldn't see outside, nobody to communicate to. I cried to God for help. God gave me an idea. I got to meet the woman. I said, at least I want to call my family back home in Cameroon to tell them I have arrived. Luckily, I had the number of this agent who picked me up at the airport. I took this number, I wrote it on a piece of paper. When I called my brother in Cameroon, I had to tell my brother, please take down this number. Call this number, tell them, please, they should remove me from this house. I'm dying. So he called and threatened the agent. The agent had to call this woman I was working in her house, that they should bring me back. The woman said, give her 1.5 million francs, that's 3,000 US dollars. That's the money she spent to bring me to Kuwait. I told her I didn't do any money transaction with her. Let her please take me back to the person who brought me in her house. Then we will settle the matter there. She refused. The agent had to force her, please, to come. They will give her money. Taking me to the agent, this woman put me in the back boot of a car. I almost died. Arriving there, she refused to give my passport to the agent that they must provide the money. So the agent told her they will get the money and give her. So the agent took me to a house where they kept housemates who don't want to work in the other houses. They gave us little food. The next day we'll come back to the office. We're kept somewhere. When somebody needs housemates, they'll come. We're being sold like property. They'll come and they look. The person will say, I need this one. That's how we're being sold. The person will come, I need a housemate from Cameroon, from Nigeria, from Ethiopia. They will come where they kept us. Then the man will come and look and choose the type of husband he wants. So this day I was in the office, this man is an Egyptian man, he came and picked me. So I told this person, please, I have a family, I have children I need to talk to, I was married, I lied to him. He said, okay, he will buy me a mobile. I didn't know this man was agreeing because he wanted to take advantage of me. When he took me to his house, the next day, he asked me to follow him to the shopping mall to get me a mobile. He bought me this mobile, brought me to the house, and was asking me some funny questions. Arriving his home, the wife was a little bit good at the beginning. This man started behaving funny. The wife left the house. This man left his room, came, and then he wanted to have sex with me. I refused. This man forced me. I struggled. I ran away, got into the kitchen. I had to pick something to hit him up. He said, if I hit him, he will call the police on me. So when the wife came back, I told the wife, please, I don't want to work with you people again. Take me back to the office. The wife tried to inquire what was the problem. I just told the wife, no, I'm fed up with the work. I don't want to work again. The wife pleaded. The man told me I'm going nowhere because he was afraid that if I go out there, I will report him. So I stayed again for some time. He stopped. There was this day he came now, tried to force me. I shouted, nobody came. So when the wife came, I told the wife, please, this is what your husband has been doing to me. I want to go, thinking that that was the solution. The wife caught knife with a man, and they tried to kill me. I ran away from the house. I saw a spare key somewhere. I opened the door. I ran away. I didn't know where to go to, and I had to come back to plead with them to take me back to the office. I slept outside for 2 days in the veranda. This man had called the police because they were struggling to force me into the house to see maybe I had any evidence against them to take. They seized my bag, they seized my mobile. He went and took the police. I don't know if it was a policeman. He talked to the man outside, came. The man was instead shouting at me. I wanted to explain to him what was going on. He would not listen. He struggled and forced me into the house. They locked the door, removed the keys. So this day they struggled, they opened my bag, they took all my certificate, my advanced level, my O levels, my birth certificate, my ID card. The little money I had on me, I've worked for the 6 months. They removed everything on me, took everything, left me with nothing. I told them, okay, if they don't want to take me to the office, they should please send me back to my country. I'm tired. The man's wife was forcing me to know what was going on. This man was threatening me that if I say anything, he will kill me. So I said I'll report to the police. He said he will pay the police and tell them to rape me and kill me and case will go nowhere. I was afraid. I begged them. I don't know what they discussed with the wife. They told me they were taking me back to the office. They took me somewhere, made some papers. I found myself at the immigration. They put me in prison, an immigration prison. I was at immigration prison for 1 week. From there, I was being removed from the immigration and put in the deportation prison where I stayed there. At the immigration, I tried to tell the police that this man is keeping my luggage, my money, everything. They should help me out. From there, I don't know how they paid my flight. They just came and called me. The only property I came with was my passport. I had just one dress on me. It was a lady that helped me at the Douala Airport to pay my transport to go meet my parents.
Karine, too, has a complicated story of her escape back from Kuwait to Cameroon.
I stayed in the house for 3 good days without eating. I was sharing my toilet with 4 cats. They took me to the agency now. They went and complained to that mama that I cried. I stink. That mama took me to her house. I said, Mama, please buy me medicine. I'm not feeling fine. That mama said, do I look at her as if she is a doctor or this is a hospital? I said, Mama, please, my stomach. It was really paining me. It affects my heart. I said, Mama, please, I'm dying. Please help me. I need to go to the hospital. That mama told me that, my child, I will not give you any medicine. She said that she's not my mother. I said, but you call me a child. She hit my stomach and I fell down. She sent me out. That was when I had that opportunity to be snapping places. Before that, when I was inside the house, where so many girls that were locked up, we don't see places. Even to look beside the window, even to look on the window, they refuse. They don't want us to see outside. I was walking on the street. My stomach is paining. I don't know where I'm going to. I was crying. My eyes just turned and I fell down. One man just called for the police ambulance. They came and told me that my body was strong. I was already dying. So when they took me, I went to the hospital. They asked for my passport. Where is my passport? I said, they seized my passport. They said, where is my civil ID? I said, I have no civil ID. So they wrote a convocation. They told me that I should go and give that mama. I took that convocation. I went to give that mama. So they said, no, you'll be good, I should give it to the police. When I went to the police station to give it to the police, they said, I should go away, that I'm stinking. When I left, I knew that the only place I can be secured is only in front of any embassy. I went and slept outside for 2 good days. I slept outside of that embassy. Since it's not an embassy, they did that thing to me. I slept there with other one Cameroon girl. And the embassy that actually saved me was Central Africa Embassy. The people took me, they went to the pharmacy, they bought some drugs and they paid. That was how I got back to Cameroon. In fact, Kuwait is not a place to be, please. Nobody should go to Kuwait. Girls are dying. More than 100 and something girls are in the prison. Nobody should go, please.
If the three are able to open up and share their testimonies about their ordeal back in Kuwait, it is thanks to the wit of members of Cameroon's Center for Victims of Human Trafficking Against Modern-Day Slavery. Professor Beatrice Titanji is the vice president of the center that today helps to rehabilitate traumatized girls.
We were interested in the welfare of the woman, and as we worked, we saw that the woman had more problems than just empowerment, financial empowerment. And as time went on, we noticed that many children were being taken from the Northwest, from Idinao, even the areas in the Southwest, taken to the big cities and maltreated. That was national. And this caused us to worry about them, and we tried to see how we could help them. So we created our center where we've been trying to rehabilitate the traumatized girls, the victims, and give them a new life. Victims who have just returned from the Middle East tell us that each day they have about 25 new arrivals from Cameroon. And one of the victims actually told us that the day she arrived Kuwait, there were 46 of them, all from Cameroon. In the plane, she didn't know about them, but as they got there, she realized that there were more girls coming and being sent to the booths. They actually have booths as you would have in a market, and they are sold and bought for domestic service. So they move them to their various owners, as negotiated before, because there are lines men here in Cameroon, as we are told, who actually negotiate, get money, sell them at higher prices, sell them depending on the outlook of the victim, as it happened 200 years ago during slave trade, if we remember roots. Our children are sold and bought today in the Middle East in that manner. There is a lot of unemployment in our country, and this unemployment is probably what is leading these children to go abroad. We have people who have graduated from universities, people who have come out from very high institutions and who cannot fend for themselves. They don't have jobs, and they are trying to see if the grass could be greener on the other side. And with this in mind, they think that if they went somewhere out of Cameroon, things could be better. So they promise them, you'll be paid $250,000. Every month, and as one of them said, 250 within 4 months, you make a million. And they are promised that they work just as domestic servants. But when they get there, they are treated as slaves. They are more or less branded as slaves, and they are called kadama. Kadama is, I think, the Arabic word for slaves. They are maltreated, they are sexually abused, they are exposed to all kinds of diseases. Some of them have wounds on their bodies, riddled by snakes because they have to pet snakes. They go through the consent of their parents because family lands, family homes are sold to raise money to pay these people here who have the contact in the Middle East or wherever it is in the world where they want to go and do these heinous duties. The thing is, the parents want them. The people feel now that if it doesn't work here, it can work elsewhere. The care we give them is getting them to feel at home. They are traumatized. They've been exposed to bad treatment. They've been called animals. They've been called bad names. They've been told they stink. And whenever they enter a car or a room, a spray is used to take off the odor, the supposed odor that they smell. These are our children. And as a mother, I cannot imagine my own child being treated like that. For instance, one came back and told us that she used to share the toilet with 4 cats, and she has a pain in her tummy. We don't know whether the pain is caused by the interaction with the cats, or because they go for long hours without eating, or because they eat the wrong food. So we take them to hospital. We pay for their treatment. One of them was thrown out of her home, and she walked under the sun for 2 days, 48, 45 degrees centigrade, desert heat. And she finally found herself in a Central African embassy where she was picked up and brought back to life. And then she was taken back to the center. And they paid for her journey back because she was very ill. We don't bring them back. We see them in Cameroon. Some of them come to our center. Some of them know us. They know the task force is in at least 3 regions, littoral, southwest, and northwest. So they come to us. They report, they say they have just come back. Or people tip us and say, look, I have a relative who has just come back. And what can I do? Because most of them are dejected. They don't want to be seen by people. They have either grown too thin or too fat by eating the wrong things. And they feel depressed because imagine telling friends that you are going abroad and you suddenly reappear. That already is a psychological trauma. Parents should not let their children accept these lines. Sell property to send a child to where you don't know. If you must send a child outside, you should find out, where is this child going to? Who is receiving the child? And what is he or she going to do there? Most of them receive their passports for the first time at the airport with a visa. They see the middleman at the airport when they are supposed to board the plane. So if the government finds them and stops this, I'm sure many of our children will be relieved from the suffering where they are going through.
To Professor Beatrice Titanji, government should join in the fight by protecting citizens from traffickers, by prosecuting recruiters and middlemen, as well as offering better job opportunities to youths.
I think it's disheartening and inhumane that people, for the love of money, will go to the extent of selling people. And sadly, we all have heard stories of how our girls are falling victim to these. And the truth is, we all fail to be extremely cautious.
Many young girls who have heard about the experience of Susan and Karen say they must watch their steps in order not to find themselves in a similar situation.
It would actually take a while for me to nurse the dream of traveling out of the country. As a lady, it gets scary sometimes if some of us have fallen victims and we might not necessarily have the ability to defend ourselves.
Traveling to Kuwait and all those other countries from the adverts that people see on the boards is not a bad thing. The thing is, traveling to a place you don't even know just because of anxiety. I think that the girls should be more conscious and don't jump at any opportunity that they see to travel abroad when they do not even know where they are going and end up being trafficked and living in deplorable conditions wherever they are and definitely do not even get what they thought they were going to get, because it's always never greener at the other side. You can always make it here. You must not travel out to make it. Traveling to Kuwait, Lebanon, and all the other countries must not be done to succeed.
Whenever a youth, either male or female, or especially females, find notices talking about traveling, they are so enthusiastic about it that they go without even knowing what they are going in for. But this is because they don't want to fall into that temptation of prostitution, because when you finish school and then you have no degree, you're just seated at home, you have nothing to do. You get so desperate and you just think, I'll do everything to come out from this, my desperate situation. They prefer doing things positive than to go do the negatives like theft, kidnapping, or prostitution. They prefer to go where they know that if they can render their services, it will be appreciated and it shall be paid for. So I will not encourage girls to just jump into the opportunity. They should make inquiries before they go for any trip out of your country.
From Yaoundé, Cameroon, I am Patience Wingo reporting for Wings.
To hear this and other Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org and check our news feed at facebook.com/wingsradio. Thank you to your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the book Women and the Gift Economy. The Wings sound logo is from Lee Bana's album A Circle is Cast. I'm Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.